Conversations. Inspiration.
Is there anything she can't handle? She looks fear in the face day after day, but yet she never runs. She's unbreakable. She's a warrior. She's you.
Growth.
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Community.
These things happen because you have to live your true self in a bigger way.
You'll hear celebrity interviews, healers, inspirational and hilarious stories. Most importantly, Maria wants to talk with you. Now, here's your host, Maria Menounos.
Happy Friday, everybody. Glad to be back with you today on this beautiful October 19th. The year is almost over. Oh, my Lord. Quote of the day, remember, all the answers you need are inside of you. You only have to become quiet enough to hear them. That is Debbie Ford, the sister of Ariel Ford, who will be on this podcast today. Glad to have you guys back here on Conversations with Maria Menounos, the podcast, where we bring you a free, fresh source of news, insight, and the best of our SiriusXM shows for the week. You can find us here every Friday on Apple Podcasts. We hope that you will rate, comment, subscribe, tell a friend about the show. This community is growing bigger and bigger, and we're all helping each other, which is so great. We hope you guys will eventually like this enough. You might want to join us on SiriusXM Stars, channel 109, weekdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. In the meantime, I love that quote. Remember, all the answers you need are inside of you. You only have to become quiet enough to hear them. Couldn't give a better quote. I mean, isn't that really the crux of The Wizard of Oz, right?
Yes. She always had the answers, and she just never believed that she did or even thought that she did. But the minute that there's an actual quote that she's like, oh, you've always had the answers, my dear. You just had to look inside
you. It was Glinda,
the
good witch. Yeah. Christy, pull it up. Glinda, the good witch, says it to Dorothy at the end.
Yeah.
You've always had the power.
Yeah, the power, right?
Right? Something like that. I used to know it by heart, I feel a little...
You've always had the power, my dear. You just had to learn it for yourself.
See? I was right. You always had the power.
So cute.
This is my favorite movie of all time.
Is it?
Yeah.
Your number one?
Oh, my number one.
Oh, will you help me? Can you help me? You don't need to be helped any longer. You've always had the power to go back to Kansas.
I have.
Then why didn't you tell her before?
Because she wouldn't have believed me. She had to learn it for herself.
Oh, that movie makes me cry every time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's such a beautiful movie, and it's so true. We do have the power. It's just whether we take that power, acknowledge it, or whether we give it away.
Yes, exactly.
But being quiet enough to hear it is so what I've learned in my journey, especially in the last 2 years, is, you know, you do have the answers. And if you don't have the answers will be sent to you if you ask for them. And then if you're quiet enough to hear them.
Yes.
Debbie herself has actually been sending me some answers lately, ever since we had Ariel on the show the first time.
Debbie's been sending you answers?
Debbie's book. Yeah, I pick up the book every once in a while, the Book of Prayers.
Uh-huh.
Debbie's Book of Prayers, and always seem to land right on the right page. I've gotten into some of her stuff on iTunes, meditations. She does a lot about fear and addressing that. So I've been getting a lot of answers from Debbie Ford lately.
Wow. Christy Olsen was in, like, you were flying last week. I swear, there was a day that I was like, whoa, Christy, like, she was just on fire. Everything was like floating. It was like she was literally, she's like, oh, I listened to Debbie Ford this morning. I was like, whoa.
That's so great.
It was crazy. Yeah. Yeah.
So what do you think, how much of a difference has it made in your life at this point?
Well, that combined with all the other healers and all the other great stuff that we hear, you can't hear this stuff every single day on the show and not soak some of it up and not see how in tune and happy and how great at manifesting the people that we have on the show are that practice all these things.
Yeah.
So a huge difference. I mean, just changing your focus, which we talk about a lot, and changing that thought process to just be positive and to stop negative thoughts and to recognize fear when you feel it and know that that's what it is and say, okay, it's all right that I'm scared, but I'm going to keep moving forward.
I love that. Yeah, it is. It's kind of like a process by osmosis, right? So you're around it and then you realize, okay, well, I kind of want what those people have. And if I want what they have, I have to start thinking the way they think and I have to start doing the things that they do, right? Because Otherwise, it's not working.
Right.
Right. So it's great to hear that. And it's great to hear that Debbie's book is helping. Now I'm going to get it too, because, you know, life is just one big journey of us just trying to be better. If you're, you know, in that place, I mean, I think like when you're really young, you don't have to think about that. When you're young, it's all about like superfluous things and fun and taking things for granted.
But that's the meaning of life. And that's the reason I think it, that's the reason I've read Esther Hicks talks about in Ask and It Is Given that our souls come here to get our desires that we want, that our soul wants to be able to, also be happy. She talks about being happy, that all we want really at the end of the day is to be happy and to conquer all the things that we want to conquer and all the desires that we want. That's it. So as children, I think we're more connected to our soul than as adults, although it seems like we're not because we're like being silly, but mm-hmm. that's really who we are. We're all really that person that we were as a kid.
Yeah.
And then everything else affected us and changed us. We're most close to our soul as children, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
In a messed up way, but I
it's funny you mentioned Esther Hicks. So I was listening to something recently and I made a note here in my little notebook. So she was saying, and I know this sounds so obvious, but when you think of the definition of nervousness, what do you think the definition of nervousness is?
The word butterflies is just what comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Excitement.
Mm-hmm.
Probably fear of other people's reactions.
Genius.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Like, you know, when someone says something, you have an aha moment. You're like, well, that was super easy. Why didn't I think about it like that? But nervousness is your worry about what they think of you or what you're about to say or what you're about to do. Are they going to like me? Is it going to work for them?
Yeah.
And it's like, why does it have to work for them? Why are we seeking other people's approvals always? Like, why can't we be seeking our approvals first, be confident in what we have and what we're bringing and who we are, and then approach someone else? Because if we approach other people in that way, then we won't be hurt by their disapproval.
Right. Yeah. And that's the problem, I think, as kids, is that as much as we are super connected to our soul, we're not. Our souls are just getting on this plane, and so we're not accustomed to other people's negative reactions toward us and their viewpoints toward us, and then, so that immediately disconnects you from your soul. So finding that balance is, I think, one of the meanings of life.
Yeah.
We like, all struggle with
why it. Are we waiting for other people to appreciate us? I've always been like felt so underappreciated, and like, but why? You know, why do we have to think like that? Why can't we appreciate ourselves? Like, I remember the work I would do with Tony Robbins. It was like, how can I give myself the praise that I want from other people so that I'm fulfilled? Rather than seek it from lower consciousness people or people who want to hurt me or don't want good things for me. Like, why can't I give it to myself? Why can't I say, you know, Maria, you did a really great job today. That was really... You know, you worked hard, you prepared, you gave that person a thoughtful interview, whatever it is, right?
Yeah, because you're surrounded by, listen, at the end of the day, even if you are surrounded by the wrong people, if you are, like Andy Puddicombe says, able to have that itch and that whatever it is, that distraction, and still be able to be focused, if we are able to be around those bad people and mm-hmm. still not care, then we're good.
Yeah.
But that's really hard.
Well, they say that that comes with age. Like Kevin's mother's like, once you hit 40, you don't give a shit.
My mom told me the other day that she doesn't give a shit about anybody's view of her anymore. She's like, Ashley, it's the most freeing feeling in the world, and it only happened like last year. She's 59.
Yeah, I think it happens at different times for everybody. Like, I don't know if I'm fully there. I'm getting there.
You're getting there. You are getting there. I've seen it.
Okay.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Thank you.
In the 1 year that I've been especially close to you, I'm very surprised. Like, it's shocking how quickly you've grown. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's inspiring. I'm like, shit, like she could do it. I can do it. Yeah. You know, I'm like, we can do it.
This Please whole, learn you know? Faster yes. so you don't have to struggle yeah. along the way. But
yeah,
how do we appreciate ourselves? How do we give ourselves the praise that we need? Mm-hmm. And so then we don't have to approach these people like puppy dogs being like, do you like me? Did I do a good job?
that was how I lived my entire career in this business. And they just, they loved it. A lot of them loved it. They're like, oh, you sucker.
Yep.
Now I'm not, this is how I'm going to get you, my pretty. And your little dog, too.
It's sad.
Yeah.
Friends are games. Everything's a game, people, but that you just, it's like the minute, if you had given them like 1 second of not giving that shit.
Oh, they would go the other way.
Exactly. But yes. But at the time, you're not going to think of that. Like, who's going to think of that?
It's like a push-pull thing, right?
Yeah.
It's like the guy who plays hard to get, exactly. You want him even more, but the guy who's all over, you're like, ew.
Exactly.
Right? It's the same thing in work dynamics, too. Like, if you are too puppy dog with them, they take advantage of you, and they're laughing at you inside because they're like, haha, I've got her.
Yes.
I've got her wrapped around my finger.
Yes.
I'm going to make her think she has to go through so many hoops at all times to constantly be worried about pleasing me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's... Yep. Effed up.
It is.
And so if you think about every dynamic in your life as, you know what, be cool, you know, be kind, be cool, whatever, like they'll come to you. You won't have to be, if that's your problem, I'm not saying like be aloof and I'm not saying don't care or anything like that.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, for people who have problems with these things like I've had, I think it's a good exercise because I used to think of other people who used to come in with their sunglasses, their noses in the air, and they weren't even as good at what they did as I was, and they commanded respect and they got it.
Yep.
And somehow people thought so highly of them.
It's a game of power.
And then I'm like, oh, do you need me to clean the floors too? Like, oh, the bathrooms, should I go clean the bathrooms? Like, because I'm like all hands on deck, like no job is below me. And... you know, I want to show what a team player I am. And they took advantage of that.
Yep. Power doesn't really exist. People could just grab power at any point.
Yeah. That's what I said.
It's really simple. You learned that from Game of Thrones.
Dorothy either owned her power or didn't.
Exactly.
And at the end, she owned her power.
Exactly. And you can own it in a good way. You don't have to shit on people. It's not black and white. You don't either, you're the person who shits on people or the person who cleans up the shit. No. You can be powerful and not shit on anyone and command respect in a positive way and still inspire people. And you gave me great advice last week. You said, Ashley, I want you to know just in your future endeavors, like, and I hope it's okay if I give this advice.
Yeah, of course.
But you were like, you know, you just need to do a good job in what you do and be confident that you did that good job. And then you walk away, do the good job, and you don't have to be trying to show that you did the job and like be nervous about the job so that people know you did the job. You do the job and you do it as best as you can. That's all you can do.
Yeah.
And it's like so simple.
Yeah.
But how simple is that? And I'm 30 and I'm like, wait, what? I just learned that now, but
well, I'm glad that it connected because, you know, whatever our training is and our path is in life will affect us everywhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere you were programmed to think that you weren't good enough and that what you were doing wasn't good enough. So you have to prove that you were good enough and like, see. And I have an element of that, like I said, so I recognized it in you. And I'm saying when you... do a great job. First of all, you got to always give your all.
Yes.
Because people will know the difference. When you give your all, you're brilliant.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, thank you.
And I told Kevin, I'm like, my God, the videos she's editing, they're just so brilliant. She's
thank
so
you.
Talented.
Thank you so much.
And then you take away from it when you're like, is this good? Oh, and then I did this and I did that. And see.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's also giving me breakthroughs. And I swear God brings people in your life so you can see the things you need to fix in yourself too.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
And so I wanted to point that out because I've been thinking about that. I'm like, she's so good. Just own it.
Yeah.
Own it.
And I'm going to.
Know you did a great job.
I'm so glad you said that.
And that's it. Because if you're doing the opposite, now you're telling me you didn't work hard enough and now you have excuses in a sense.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Crush it. Do your best.
Mm-hmm.
Give her your best and then go from there.
Yeah.
Hope you like it.
And I think exactly. Right. Exactly.
And if you don't, give me the constructive notes and let me fix it. That's it.
Right. And I think that's a great lesson for other people too, how you look at people in life and as gifts for you as well, because you might be able to figure out something about yourself. And it's a great lesson as well. And a lot of people can now look at their circumstances, say, oh, wait a minute, I just discovered something about myself from that circumstance.
Exactly.
That's great. That's a great piece of advice.
Well, we have more on today's show.
No way. Tell me.
There's more?
So much.
But wait, there's more.
So
today on the show, we have two great women on the show. So Ariel Ford, who we were just chatting a little bit about her sister, Debbie. Ariel Ford is a love and relationship expert. She's an author. And she is going to teach us how to not just learn to live with our past kind of rooted issues, but to use our core wounds to live our best life. I hope that made sense.
It did.
She's going to lead us through what she calls a feelingization for abundance, because who doesn't want more of that? And just an overall great conversation with her. We also have Robin Anton. She's a renowned choreographer, creator of the Pussycat Dolls. And so while we know her from, you know, this amazing group that sold over 20 million records, she's also a mom to her golden retriever, Sugar, who she recently lost. And between our text exchanges, we both realized that we needed to do this interview on the show to help grieving pet owners come through this a little easier. So she was texting me, you know, in the process, and she was like, why isn't there anywhere people can go? And I said, well, why don't we do a show on this so that if you've lost a pet, you can listen to this. And if you're listening to this and you know someone who's going through it, who might be going through it soon, you can send them the link to this and say, listen to these people who have gone through it. We'll kind of walk you through step by step how it feels, and the different ways to deal with it, and some little tips and tricks that we've amassed along the way. So we're going to start with Robin Anton and our conversation about her beloved Sugar. Guys, my next guest is a renowned choreographer, producer, and entrepreneur. She created the Pussycat Dolls, one of the most successful girl groups of all time with over 20 million albums sold. Now co-founder of the Playground LA Dance Studio. Please welcome my friend Robin Anton.
Hey.
How are you?
Do I have to like dance for my introduction? I'll do a little of this.
I know. A little leg lift.
Yeah.
Love it.
You know, normally we would be talking about the playground and all the amazing things you do in the dance world, but today we're talking about something less fun, but we are going to help a lot of people through their journeys. We're going to talk about losing a pet, and we're going to do that for the sake of everybody, because you texted me and you said, where do people go? Like, I wish there was somewhere you could go. And so let's talk a little bit about Sugar.
Okay.
Your beloved golden.
Tears right away.
I know, your baby. So it was just like a week ago, right?
Today.
A week ago today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The interesting thing is, like, when you said, you know, I have Pussycat Dolls and Playground and all that, she was a part of all of that. So it's interesting because it all kind of does fit together, you know? She was there. Through everything.
She was your sidekick and everything. Everyone knew her.
Everyone. I was just telling you, you know, I had a friend who was just working on a music video dancing. I'm obviously around dancers 24/7 because of my studio. And he said, hey, I was just working on this video. And somebody just said to me, hey, oh, you dance at Playground LA? And he said, yeah. And they said, do you know Sugar? Oh. And he said Sugar the dog? And they said, yeah, that dog is just so amazing. And he was like, yeah, of course I know Sugar. And, you know, there's so many stories of how she touched so many people. And it really is something we can all relate to with our pets, you know, and that are not just, you know, they're more than, they're human. They're our little babies, you know, and they're with us, you know. She was with me for 12 years, and I did ask you, you know, how do I get, like, the pain is so powerful, you know, it's like, where do you go? You know, it's only been a week now, and I've definitely, cried a lot, you know, and going to my, every step I take every day is like the new step is like, you know, okay, now I'm going to go, now I have to get in my car that she's not going to be in my car. You know, now I need to go to, you know, my house, my parents are now living in my house, one of my houses, and it's the house that she grew up in. And so going there was a big challenge. And so I'm just trying to take every step forward to actually be, you know, make myself do that. So yeah. It's not a shock, you know, and going to my dance studio, which is what I just did 2 days ago for the first time, was a big deal for me because she was there from, you know, we've been open almost 2 years now, and she was there and was a part of everyone, all the dancers coming in. You know, she would run out into the middle of class sometimes. I'd be like, sugar! You know, like, just the funniest things that she would do. And it's something that we all experience, you know, like, you know, when your pet leaves you, you feel like you kind of feel very alone and you feel like mm-hmm. you're the only one. I'm walking around. I go to like Coffee Bean or go wherever I go and I'm looking around thinking, I feel like I'm the only one that just lost my best friend, you know?
Yeah.
And meanwhile, so many people go through it so much because unfortunately they don't live such, you know, this long, crazy life like we do, you know? And I, that's when I asked you, you know, is there like a place you can go? Is there like a group forum? Is there something that you can go to or, you know, or set up or something that you could just talk about it and just talk about your feelings because it's not everyone in the world understands. Maybe they don't because they don't have, maybe they are not dog lovers or they're mm-hmm. not, you know, they're not pet owners or for whatever reason, but then you find out more and more they actually are and you didn't yeah. know that. You know what I mean? Everyone yeah. that I've talked to that I've said, you know, I've cried and people have said, I'm so sorry. I love sugar. And then I say, you know, do you know, like, if you lost a pet, every single person is like, yes, I understand. Or my parents just did. And, you know, I think it's also something like that it, when you, as you get older, I think it's seems like overall it does get harder.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Like, it's hard in general. I mean, first of all, shout out to Christy for putting tissues on all of our tables because
I forgot.
but you know, that's why I always say talk to people and stay close to people who have gone through it because they will help you feel normal, feel less alone. Because it is like whenever you go through anything tough in life, like when my mom was diagnosed with brain
Absolutely.
Cancer, I remember walking around and being in such a state of shock and feeling like the whole world is moving forward and yeah. you're just dead.
Dead.
And walking, you're just
like a zombie.
Like the walking dead, like yeah. a zombie.
Yeah.
And so, and the same thing when we've lost a pet. Which I call it a pet for the purposes of the show.
I know.
But,
it's not a baby.
You're a baby.
Yeah.
And so with our first, Noelle, Noelle was quadriplegic.
Oh
we had
God.
To carry her everywhere. She couldn't walk. We had, you know, Kevin was giving her vitamins upon vitamins every day because she actually lived to 19. The vets God. At, I think, 11 told us to put her to sleep. They said she's not going to make it. And so she had an autoimmune disease that attacked her joints. And when it came time, like the first one is so hard because they always say you'll know when to put her down.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, what does that mean?
What is that? I don't know. Yeah.
Was sugar your first loss?
No, I had another golden retriever before her. And so I knew when she started, I knew when she turned 9, you know, that was like the time that was sort of like she was starting to get, you know, she just slowed down like a tiny bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 10, definitely more. And then it was like the stairs were a little bit harder. And, you know, and I had her on supplements. And I mean, I learned so much from you, from the dog birthday parties.
Yeah.
Robin, Batman and Robin.
Oh, yeah.
Robin.
Bert, yeah.
Bert. He gave me all these great, you know, he gave me just great advice and different supplements to give her. And it really did help her. It helped her coat and it helped her energy and everything. And so I did have her on a lot. She just, you know, she started gaining weight and I just had to like kind of make a lot of adjustments. But it got to a point where I knew as it really got further along,
something was
happening. But also thanks to you for giving me 3 months of what felt like a puppy because of Dr. Carlson, who, you know, the first vet that I brought her to, and not to say anything negative, but they did say, okay, well, you know, here they handed me brochures to say, here, this is what happens when you, you know, to euthanize your dog. And I'm like, well, wait, no, that's not why I'm here. I'm here because she, look at her, yeah. Look at her face. You know what I mean?
She still wants to be here.
She's not ready. Yeah. And then that's when I called you and I'm so thankful.
Oh.
I really am.
Oh my God, of course.
I got to, you know, he did surgery on her, which I would have never done back to, you know, my first dog. Like when she got sick, I didn't know. And I was like surgery on a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
Nobody who does that, you know, and that was what he said. He said, I know if a 12-year-old dog can handle it, like I can look at your dog and tell you. And he said, she can handle it.
Yeah. Dr. Carlson's amazing.
God,
and we are thankful to Tamar Geller for getting us to Dr. Carlson because he's operated on our 17-year-old.
Wow.
I mean, he's amazing.
Wow.
This vet. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was, I mean, it really, truly like she just popped back up and I was able to take her, you know, to the beach and dragged her with me to San Diego. I dragged her around the world, literally, like for people.
But I feel like those last 3 months you got to enjoy her knowing that your days were numbered, you weren't going to have her forever. But now it's like the most appreciative times, right?
I mean, I just said I got to say goodbye to her for 3 months, you know, and still, and this is where the sitting and being able to talk about it and understand and know that that other people feel the same is you can say goodbye for, you know, say he said you have another 12 years. You can say goodbye for 12 years. And then when it happens, you're still not ready.
Yeah.
And you're still, and it's just like anyone that we lose. But I really was, I felt so unprepared, you know, like I had to take every step to, like I said, doing all the different things and even down to sitting in all the spots that I had her bed. I had like 12,000 beds in my house, of course, you know, and different spots that she was in, and just to be able to really feel her, you know, I know.
That's hard, Robin.
I know.
I told Robin, I said, okay, here's how it's going to go. I said, you're going to feel like a Mack truck is running over your heart back and forth in the beginning. And it's going to come in waves. And then you're going to be so tired, you're going to pass out, or you're going to need to go eat.
Yeah.
So you're going to go eat with friends. And then
I ate too much
because
I hadn't eaten and then I got sick.
And then you'd go home and you're going to cry again. And this is going to be the cycle, at least for the first couple days.
Yeah.
And then you're going to realize that you got to pick up the pieces and move forward. Mm-hmm. And you're going to start to eventually think about going back to work. And then you're going to do all of that stuff. And I said, in the interim, one of the things that I did with our first, I don't know where I came up with this. So when we lost Noelle, Kevin and Noelle were so incredibly bonded, even though she and I were too.
Yeah.
They both needed each other in a different way.
Yeah.
And they were scotch taped together.
Right.
So when we put Noelle down, the vet came to the house, or the vet tech, and I'll never forget when that doorbell rang and my heart just like went into my stomach and I'm like, oh my God, this is it. But I had to be the tough one. So we put Kevin had Noelle on his chest and the vet tech came in the room. And we had all the dogs around because they suggest to have your other dogs around so they can have that closure and finality too. And he held her on her chest and I just kept kissing her snout as he injected her with the euthanasia.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I just kept telling her I loved her and kissed her and kissed her and kissed her and we're bawling.
Oh,
and so in the interim, my friend had built her, Joe, had built her a little casket and he had dug a hole and we were going to bury her in the yard. And so when the vet tech finished, he left. I said, Kevin, I'm going to give you a few minutes. I took everything that said Noelle out of the house.
Yeah.
Her dog treat, toys, her beds, her bowls, anything that would remind me of her, I removed instantly, put in big black trash bags and hid in the garage.
Yeah.
Because we needed no reminders.
Yes.
This was the most devastating thing for us to lose. And
so it's so familiar, everything you're saying.
That's why I told you, I'm like, remove all, if you can, and everybody's different, but this is what I did. So I removed everything. I went back upstairs and I said, are you ready for me to take her? And he said, yes. So I took her, I walked her right outside, put her in the casket, bawled my brains out, said goodbye, and we buried her. And then that was it. And so from there, I remember having to go to work. I went to the Super Bowl for Access Hollywood, and I would go to work, and I would cry when I'd come back. And then I'd go to work, and I'd be tough, and then I would cry.
Yeah.
And Kevin came with me, and we cried the whole like week I was there. But work always helps you get through everything in life.
It does.
Death of a family member, illness. Work is such a great distraction.
It's so true.
So I always say, take the time you need to mourn, but then give yourself that gift of like going back and being distracted.
Exactly.
And so those are some of the things that I say. And then I always say, at some point, this is what we did. We introduced the doggy honor program. So we would rescue a new dog in that baby's honor.
So I
always say, like, for you, and I said this to you too via text, in Sugar's honor, Sugar would never want you. And I know this, and people say this stuff, but our dogs, for sure, more than even
for
people
sure.
mean
I,
this.
I agree. Yeah.
Sugar would never want to see you sad like this. She knows how much you love her.
Oh,
she doesn't need to see you mourn. So, and she would want you to go rescue another baby in her honor.
Absolutely.
So that another baby in a shelter has a home like yours.
Yeah.
Oh my God, she would be so thrilled.
Absolutely.
So
I mean,
that's the way to get over things. And a lot of people have a hard time with that because they feel like
it's not
guilty.
Yes.
And they're afraid
how could I do that to my the dog that I love? Like, you know.
Right. But it's not like that.
No.
Life moves forward.
It's so
and you
true.
Need to move forward.
And especially because every single time that I cried in her presence, anytime that I, you know, I raised my voice, anything, she would get like, look at, you know, she'd come running in from the other room, like looking at me like, no, the, you know, and immediately I would look at her and say, it's okay. Like we'll always be that way. Like, be very aware that, you know, I mean, you know, you do that with a child too. It's like, you don't, you know, you're careful around, you know, saying things like, I mean, honestly, I would say, you know, words that like, literally she'd just be like, did she just say, and she knew every single word that I would say and respond in such a way. It was crazy, you know? And so it really helped. She helped me like, you know, check myself. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And I mean, you know, you can't help emotions and crying, but like there were times where if I'd get, you know, heated, and I'm not going to say that I haven't in business or in different things that I'm doing,
of course,
that I would check myself and realize like, okay, like just take it down, you know, and Sugar's right here. And she just, I know it stresses her out. So I don't want to be that way, you know? Yeah. And so it's really, It is so interesting. That's so true that if we were able to ask them, what is it that they would want? You know, I want Robin to be happy, you know, and what makes her happy? Having a dog, having a pet, having a baby, you know, and I don't have children.
Having something to give that love to.
Yeah. And even if I did.
And like, to get that love, even more importantly, Sugar would want you to get that love from another baby.
And I just keep saying, you know, when it feels the right time, you know? So I'm just sort of like right now, I'm just kind of like taking, just processing every moment. And you know, I removed everything I did. You're like my hero in all of this, honestly. Like it's crazy. Cause I knew, you know, I know a lot of people that are dog lovers, and I know a lot of people that are involved in a lot of different organizations for, you know, even for everything having to do with animals. And you were, I just immediately in my, something said, call Maria, you know, and
I'm glad you did.
Yeah. And it really, and you know, in the beginning when I first brought her in and this time, and, it's just, we had a little dinner the other night, my business partner, Kenny from, Playground, and Lauren, his girlfriend, set up a little celebration dinner for Sugar. It was so nice. And we like just, it was like a, you know, we just toasted and talked about her and all the different things that everybody loved about her. And it really felt good because just knowing that, I mean, you know, all my families, from my Playground family to my family, you know, everyone, it, you know, deals with it different. And then also in the same way, because we all loved the same, you know?
You know, the other thing I did that was really helpful for me, because for me, it's like I always wanted to honor their memories and feel like I always kept them close.
Yeah.
Right. Like I still have all of their pictures on my walls everywhere. And then we just add the new babies who come into our lives.
Yes.
But I wore their collar tags.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I think that's like such a great way. It made me show myself that they were right there with me. It felt good. So like I had Noelle's charm on forever.
Wow.
And then I had Apollo's charm on. And I had Athena's charm on. And I have to put baby's charm on. But Kevin was the one who took her while I was away. Mm-hmm. And he hasn't given me, I don't know where her tags are. And he was so distraught. I didn't want to keep bothering him about it.
Right. Yeah.
But I have her on my phone. So like every time I open my phone, I have baby and me kissing her.
Same. She's my like absolute, like there's no way that I, you know, my mom was like, do you want to change?
No.
And I said, no. I mean, I might change the picture and do like a different
picture.
That's
the one thing I've kept. Like I said, I removed everything from the house.
Yeah.
But that I always keep. And Kevin, even just yesterday, baby, we lost her in February. He was kissing his phone. He literally is kissing his phone because he misses her so much.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And I felt like one of the hardest things was obviously coming home. And because Sugar was your only dog, I'm sure it's even worse. Mm-hmm. For me, the time I felt it even the most was we lost Athena, our standard poodle. And then we lost Apollo, our German Shepherd, within a few months of each other.
Oh, my God.
Two big dogs gone from the house.
That's presence. And it's so much presence. It's crazy.
It's massively painful. Know. Like, that was so massively hard to deal with. Like, these huge presences gone.
Yeah.
And we did a renovation. We literally, the room that they was like their room. Gone. Knocked it out. I couldn't look at it anymore. It was crushing my heart.
I know. I know. I mean, being fresh in it right now, every time I open the door and whenever I see anyone, I mean, all, you know, just everyone that knows her, it's like, I just go, okay, just, you know, like I definitely had a good 4 days of just not like completely losing it.
Yeah.
And I'm just really trying to be strong. So I know I feel like I could be that way for the next year, but I'm really working on it every day that I'm not walking around like that. Cause I know that Sugar does not want me to be that way. Yeah. You know,
and it's good. Like I said, in the beginning, you have to let it out.
You gotta let it
out.
Don't
suppress it. You have to let it out.
Yeah.
And then after that, you gotta get yourself distracted. Yes. So you're not holding anything in. Yes. You're just distracted.
And it's just pushing through to get yourself distracted. But walking through the door was like first, you know, a couple of days walk in and just beeline to the other rooms where I don't have to, you know,
feel it.
And, I'm getting ready to move right now. I've been in the process of buying another house.
Oh, wow.
So,
it's actually good timing in a way.
You know, it really feels good. Like there's a cleansing part of it right now that every time I was trying to, you know, every time I'd go look at a house, I would think of, okay, this is for Sugar. And of course it's like, you know, this is what she would want. You know what I mean? So I feel like it's going to really help a lot to be able to be in a new environment, a new space, and
absolutely
new life. And I'll be honoring her all over. But this space, this place that I'm in right now, it definitely is like, okay, you know, it's like, I have to honor where this is, where she got sick. This is where, you know, this is where she, but this is also where I was able to give her more life. And so, and this is, you know, we had a lot of happy times and there's so much, there's, you know, the good and the bad in a way. I wanted to show you, it was at the very, very, very end. And, the nurse was in the room and she said, do you want her hair and for her. And I was, of course, like I did, you know, and she started to like cut it. I'm like, be careful, you know, like, yeah. don't want to, you know, it, of course, it's just yeah. so much, she's a golden retriever.
Huge, yeah.
thick mound of hair. Yeah. So this, the one thing, like, so I've been carrying it around. Of course, it's in a Louis Vuitton box. But so aww. I kept it in the baggie because this is what, I just felt I was going to take it out and put in something else. And I was like, I have to keep it in here. But, and I wrote on it, love you. I love you, sugar. I love you forever. My little angel.
Aww.
I know. So I just put it up on my refrigerator with a picture of her and just like, kind of just touch it every day.
So you kind of have her. You yeah. know, my mom did, this just makes me so emotional. Mm-hmm. My mom did that too for us. She took a little bit of all their fur
yeah.
and she put it in a frame
yeah.
with their
yeah.
picture.
Yeah.
And then my dog groomer, Jen, Hollywood groomer girl. She's amazing. She at Christmas time made us these beautiful ornaments that she hand decorated and she put their fur inside.
Oh my God. Beautiful.
So of course we lost baby within a month of that. And that was just like, I knew how special that gift was then.
Yeah.
And now I hold on to it even tighter because it was such a beautiful way to do it. You might want to do that too. You might want to put it in an ornament.
Yeah. And I even thought of it even
every
like
Christmas you'll put it there.
Yeah.
Even a little
locket.
Yeah.
You know, just like a little, like just sort of different pieces of like something like that. Like a, you know, a little like something enclosed near my bed, something, you know, that I like framed and maybe even a locket and things
like
that.
Then they're always with you.
Yeah. And she
will be with you regardless.
You
could lose all of this. She's with you always.
No,
it's
always.
Your memories. It's your heart.
It is.
But these are like little coping things. I think that help people kind of get through it because it takes a long time to get through this. It's not something that's just going to go away.
Exactly.
You're 1 week out. And I feel like, we're
fresh.
Months out and I look at baby and I'm just like, I miss her so much, but we know it's the unfortunate thing that happens. Mm-hmm. We only have them for so much time and it's maybe God trying to show us that we should really live every moment we can and just
it's
make
so
the best.
True. Yes. And this is another very strange thing that, you know, today is 1 week exactly today. And it's right now, the time.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's 1 week.
Were you alone?
No. I called my brother, Neil, because she had an incredible day with her. I was at my studio. It was interesting because Cameron Diaz is one of my, you know, best friends for years, and she's always been so supportive of everything I've done, and she's such an incredible animal lover and dog lover, and I happened to, we hadn't seen each other in a while, and it was just strange because she was there when I got Sugar, like she was in, you know, we were really, really in each other's lives, and we were both kind of going through sort of similar situations at the same time, and breakups and all that stuff. And so she was there and we've been, you know, in each other's lives throughout the last 12 years a lot, but we hadn't seen each other in a while. And so I saw her two nights before Sugar but then I was with her and I was telling her the whole story about you and about Dr. Cross and about, you know, bringing her back. And she's like, I can't wait to see her. And then she came to Playground the next day and took dance class. And like, we just, you know, just, it was just, it was
she
like
bookended sort of, Sugar's life.
Yeah. She, it's so crazy.
Yeah, she's got the chills.
She did. And she just came and she saw Sugar and she was like, oh my gosh, Sugar. And like gave her all this love. And Sugar was so excited. Like, like it was crazy. And we had so much fun. And then it was the next day and I just, it was just so interesting how it happened. Like that timing was so crazy, you know, and she gave me so much like this very similar positive, you know, just reinforcement on getting, you know, how to get through it and advice and everything, you know, and it was just, it was nice to have, you know, someone else just like how you were with me. And I can't tell you how thankful I am to have that, you know, because some people just cry and say, I'm so sorry. And even that means everything.
So much, yes.
But then when you have like these perspectives of sort of like, okay, this is, you know, this is the circle of life and this is how it happens and this is what you need to go through. And, you know, you need to, you know, process in the way that you process and talk to people and be around people that love dogs. Crazy. Like she gave me this, she literally gave me the same advice. She's like, this is, you know, you need to, like when I see dogs on the street now, I'm like, I always look at dogs. You know what I mean? Yeah. But now when I see people walking their dogs, I think, okay, like I don't feel so alone, you know?
Of course.
It's the weirdest feeling. Like just feeling I kept saying this too. Like I was like, I said, oh my God, I feel like I don't know if I think this is worse than any breakup I've ever had. Like, I mean,
no,
I,
it's awful.
Awful, right?
If you have not gone through this pain,
gone through it twice.
You have no idea. Torture. And that's why I say this to you. So if you see someone going through it, know it is literally like a Mack truck
is
running over your heart and your chest.
Oh my God.
Back and forth mercilessly.
Yes.
And it's excruciating. Like you hurt from the screaming cries.
Yeah.
Like the pain in your neck and your chest is so deep. You can't, your nose clogs up from the crying.
Exactly.
It's like some people actually cry harder over their dog than family members.
Yes.
It's so true. It's such a strange,
it's like a quiet thing that people talk about where they're like, I didn't cry like this over this so-and-so. And I'm like, oh gosh.
But you know what? You know what I realize about that because I'm in it right now and I keep, this is something that I keep going over. What is it that is making my heart feel like I can feel it broken in half, like just so painful. Like, and I keep thinking, you know, I am understanding that it's because of, it's all the different, there's so many words that connect to it. Routine, you know, the friendship, you know, love, taking care of, you know, it's like when 5 PM hits 5:30, my whole body just goes, like, it literally goes, that's my time to feed my baby. You know what I mean? Like she looks at me like, and she used to do this like, woo, 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 like make this crazy sound right at 5 PM, you know, like that's 'cause she knows it's time to eat and, you know, just so smart, you know, and it's just, it's like, I realize the daily routine of, you know, constant, here we go, get jumping in the car. You know, I bought this like ramp for her to get in my car because I didn't want to like make her jump in the car anymore. And, you know, different things like that, that I just was so like, okay, like I have to take her with me everywhere.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to, you know, she wants to be with me.
She's your best friend. She's your companion.
Best friend. And, and so it's the things, I think that when people get confused to why, not only do they just miss their child, their baby, their best friend, but it's also that routine that you're so used to. And some people, like change for me is such a hard thing, you know, and it's teaching me a lesson. Like change is good, you know, and it's okay to change your routine and change, you know, I feel like I walk around with this like stomach, this sort of sick stomach. And that's why I brought up Cameron too, is because she, you know, really helped be there for me. Like when I was feeling so sick, and then she sort of just got me up out of the house. Let's go. You know what I mean?
She brightened you up.
Just brightened me up, you know, and just having those conversations, seeing you today has already made me feel, it really has made me feel like so much lighter. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, you know, people don't realize it's like these animals come into our lives for so many different reasons. Yeah. I feel like they're there to teach us unconditional love.
Yeah.
They're there to give us love. They're there for us to show our love. But they're also there to teach us different things. Like each one of my pets has taught me something different. And I've learned something from each one of them.
True.
The power of never giving up, right? Like Noelle, when the vet said we should put her down because she had this autoimmune disease and she wouldn't live, we didn't give up. Kevin was like, nope,
no,
we're going to figure out a way to wean her off this steroid. And we're going to study and create a supplement routine to, you know, override the negative effects of the prednisone and eventually get her off. And then we're going to get her swimming because even though she can't walk, her shoulders still move and her little nubs will still move.
Cute.
And so we would swim her And so we had little jingles in the house and little sayings like, we don't give up in our house and little things like that.
Oh, my God.
And it was prepping us for potentially the fights that were to come with my mom and with me. And so each one of them was different. And the deaths are different, too. And I don't think that one is better than the other. That was one I've also tackled is like, Noelle, we were waiting and it was like, when do you do it? When do you do it? When do you do it? She literally, I came home from a trip. She waited for me. She gave me two kisses on the nose. And I said, Kevin, she's ready to go. She waited for me. She gave me her last kisses. I know she's done. And then we took her to the vet and they said all her organs are shutting down. Wow. And I just felt it.
That's exactly what happened with Sugar.
Yeah. And so, and then with, I'll never forget, Apollo was a shock. Apollo wasn't doing well. And out of nowhere started doing great. And we're like, wow, this is amazing. And then Kevin called me and said, you need to rush down here now. We have to put him to sleep now.
Oh,
everything's exploding in his system. Like, you can't get here fast enough. And I'm like,
oh, my
like
God.
Like, the shock of that. And
yes.
You have to rush down.
I mean, you don't want to.
Brutal. There was no, like, oh, let's, you know, there's steps here. So every dog's passing is different. And I just want to leave you with, it all hurts.
It does.
Equally.
It does.
There's not one that's better than the other.
No.
I don't think waking up to a dead dog is going to be any better than euthanizing a dog.
Exactly.
They're all painful and we all are going through it. So if you're out there going through it, you're not alone. Share this with people who are going through it so that they can have a little relief in knowing that, you know, we've all gone through it or we're going through it. And, you know, Robin, thank you so much for coming in and sharing
your
story about Sugar.
Thank you so much.
I loved little Sugar.
I know. She was just...
And so many people did. So
she's just dancing around now up there.
Hope that helps you guys through your pet loss or your friend's pet loss. In the meantime, we're going to go over to Ariel Ford. She is a love and relationship expert, best-selling author. As president of the Ford Group, Inc., she's helped launch the careers of Deepak Chopra, her sister Debbie Ford, of course. Today, she's helping us identify and work through what's affecting us from our past to move forward. Please welcome Ariel Ford.
Yay.
Hi, girls.
Hey.
I wanted to dedicate the entire show today to you because I remember after your last appearance, we started chatting about all these things. I'm like, next time you come in, we have to talk about this and I'm going to do the whole show. And so I want to get right into it because I want to help all of us be able to move forward from these things that are haunting us. And so you talk about core wounds. Explain what a core wound is.
Yeah, and we all have them. Okay, so it's totally normal to have core wounds. Mm-hmm. And it's our deepest insecurity, our deepest fear, the thing that turns our world upside down when our buttons get pushed, the thing we absolutely don't want anybody else to know about us. And it's the thing that drives us to want to do self-help and personal growth kind of stuff because it causes us so much psychic pain.
Mm. Is it also called our shadow? Is that the shadow?
Yes. Yeah, my sister referred to it as the shadow. And there's, you know, I think there's a slight difference because I think there are certain shadow aspects that are sort of familiar to everybody. But the core wounds are more individual. So, for instance, my core wound is defensiveness and poverty consciousness. Mm. Other people have things like they feel unworthy, unlovable, insecure.
Not enough.
They have abandonment issues. Not enough. Or my friend Christy Whitman, hers is, I'm too much. I want too much. I need too much. So, and she's embarrassed by that because it causes problems, or so she thought. So we all have the core wounds. And then the good thing about the core wounds is it's what drives us.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have had the success that I've had in my life if I didn't have the poverty consciousness.
Yes, me too.
driving me constantly.
Yeah.
You know, so really what I see the goal as is we want to find ways to manage and sort of manipulate the core wound and use it to our biggest advantage. And where people tend to get a little screwed up is they don't understand that the core wounds never really go away.
Mm-hmm.
So you could get 90% better, but they'll pop up again. But the difference will be if you learn how to sort of mitigate the downside of it, learn how to befriend it, find ways to self-soothe, then you can just go, oh, it's you again. Okay.
Is that when they refer to it as the shadow self and that being a good thing too?
Well, my sister talked about having a shadow self and a light self. Okay. And so the shadow self is our anger, greed, envy, that sort of stuff.
I call it my shitty self.
Right, right. You know, and like I said, all of us have a big shadow self. Mm-hmm. And most people don't have any problem identifying, oh, that's my shadow. Right. But what they don't recognize is their light self. Mm. You know, Marianne Williamson had that great quote, you know, our deepest fear is not how bad we are, but our goodness. I don't remember the exact quote, but it was that sort of thing.
Oh, no. She said our deepest fear. We had her on recently.
Okay.
Our deepest fear isn't that we're inadequate. It's that we are powerful beyond measure.
Yes. Yes. So that's the light self, embracing that we are that power.
And why would we be scared of that?
Well, I think
because I feel like most of us are afraid that we're not good enough deep down. And that's what Tony Robbins teaches us, is that we always feel like we're not enough. But she's saying that we actually fear that we're more powerful.
Because we can't actually hold the thing that maybe we are God. You know, that's sort of a concept that turns everything we've been taught upside down. Maybe we are on equal playing field with the divine, and there's this divine part of us. We're the drop in the divine ocean. Yeah. And if we acknowledge that we're that, then we can't really entertain the dark side quite as much.
Ooh. So if we're of, because we are of the divine, right? The divine flows through us because we're part of the divine and we're made
from the
divine.
Well, you know that. Ashley knows that. I know that. But there's a whole bunch of people out there who just like, well, I'm not divine, you know.
But if we're of the divine, maybe the problem is that we see our downfalls and feel guilty for the downfalls, right?
Yes. And part of that is because we've bought into this crazy idea that we can be perfect.
Which leads me to my next question, because is perfectionism one of the core wounds? And there was a something else I was going to say with that, but I forgot it now, because perfectionism is really us not thinking we're enough.
Yes.
Right?
It's the flip side of it. The problem with perfectionism is we're always left being disappointed and upset with ourselves because
or
we want to be right. Because we have these unrealistic expectations. Mm-hmm. So what I like to share with people is that there's this concept called wabi-sabi, and it's an ancient Japanese aesthetic that seeks to find beauty and perfection in imperfection. And the way they express it in Japan is like, let's imagine we had this big Ming vase and it was an antique worth millions. It had a long, crooked crack down the middle of it. The Japanese would take this vase, put it on a pedestal, and shine a spotlight on the crack. And they might even use 24 karat gold to fill in the crack to accentuate it even more.
Wow.
So it's about honoring the cracks in ourselves and the cracks in everybody else around us, because everybody's imperfect. I mean, God is perfect, but the rest of us mere mortals, we're imperfect.
So I remember working at a Tony Robbins seminar and realizing, okay, I have to abandon perfectionism. And when it's bred into you from, you know, a small child that you need to be perfect for everybody, you need to look perfect at church, you need to act perfect, you need everybody to think you're perfect, it's really hard to shed. So I was like, okay, I'm going to wear mismatched socks, or I'm going to do something that's just off so that I can train myself, and I couldn't do it.
Well, you know,
how do we get break free of the perfectionism?
You have to find a way to reframe it. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you a quick story that really explains wabi-sabi. There's this couple that I know named Jerry and Diane. They've been married for 30 years. He's 25 years older. They're both psychiatrists. And when they got married, she quickly discovered that he had an addiction she didn't know about. He's addicted to poppy seed bagels.
And
every single morning before she gets up, he goes in the kitchen and he slices his poppy seed bagel, which sends hundreds of little black seeds all over her white tile floor.
Oh, man.
Then he toasts the bagel and then he puts a smear of cream cheese on it. And then he walks around the kitchen eating his bagel, dropping even more little black seeds.
I would go nuts.
Well, every single morning she gets up, the first thing she does does is she gets a wet paper towel, gets on her hands and knees, and she wipes up all the seeds. And normally it's not a problem. But one morning she was in a really bad mood, and while she was wiping up the seeds, she had this thought, oh, I wonder what has to happen so I never do this again, which was followed by the thought, oh, that would mean Jerry's no longer with me. Mm. And she started to cry. And from that day forward, every morning as she was wiping up the little black seeds, her heart would fill with love because the seeds now meant she had another day to spend with Jerry.
Oh, that's going to make me cry. I can't.
Oh. Yeah. Oof. And so what happened here? That did Jerry change? Jerry did not change. What changed was her story about the behavior. So if we can learn to do that with ourselves, you know, and then with each other and reframe the story, that's what I call wabi-sabi love. Now, I have to say there's one caveat. It doesn't work if there's bad behavior, abuse, or addiction.
Yeah.
You cannot wabi-sabi your way out of that. You need professional help.
Yeah.
But for every other annoyance...
Yeah, like
you know,
when your husband spills water outside of the shower and doesn't use a towel to make sure he's dry before he exits.
Right, and that's that's never going to stop.
Yeah.
But if he were, you know, God forbid, to die tomorrow, you would be wishing to have the wet spots on the floor.
Totally. I try to remember those things in frustrated moments with anybody. I'm like, okay, well, would you like the Converse? Would you like them not to be here to have to deal with this? And then you're like, no. Yeah.
Right. And and the truth is, there's this great marriage researcher at the University of Washington named Dr. John Gottman. He's the world's leading guy in his field. And he has said that every single couple has a minimum of 9 irreconcilable differences. These are things you're never going to agree on ever, ever. Things like, you know, one's always late, one's on time.
I want sushi, he wants pizza.
Right. Or one's a spender, one's a saver.
Yes.
Right?
And, yes.
But the thing is, nobody tells us that before we get married. We want to change them. We want to fix them because we think that something's wrong. And the truth is, it's totally normal to have these differences. What isn't normal is to use them as a reason to split up.
Mm.
And the way around it is to find creative solutions for it.
Well, I think it's funny. When I look at Kevin and I, we've been together 20 years. And I feel like God brought us together for a lot of reasons because, for example, he is a spender and I am a saver, and I would have never been a spender, and he would have maybe never, well, he was a little bit of a saver before me, but we balance each other out basically. And I think the things that I'm really good at that he's not good at, we again balance each other out there too. So in the right situation, you can learn from each other.
And that's what Harville Hendrick says the purpose of marriage is. He believes the purpose of taking sacred vows and getting married is so that you're living in this safe container in which all of your earliest childhood core wounds can surface to be healed.
Ooh, so that's a burden on your partner in a sense,
but not
right?
Not really, because it's your best friend, your lover, your safe place to land, and you're on this journey to heal each other.
Wow.
So for all the single people out there who are working on themselves thinking, well, I'm not ready for a relationship because I don't love myself enough or I need to fix this, I want to say to them, stop it. Because there's no faster place to heal and grow than in a relationship with somebody who loves you.
Wow.
And who you are right now is enough. You're
Ooh.
Lovable enough right now.
Did you hear that, Ashley Daniels?
Yeah, I'm writing it.
I feel like she was talking directly to you.
I take back
my advice the other day when I was like, I don't think you're ready yet.
I was just thinking that.
She's in a situation. And I was like, go find yourself and heal yourself and then come back
okay,
into a relationship.
Okay, Ashley, I'm doing my last live weekend workshop of the year next month at Omega Institute.
Really?
Called The Soulmate Secret. And
it is
amazing and fun. So you should come
to
that.
I would love to.
Yeah, I'll send you a link.
Please.
Later. It's
Thank
amazing.
You. Yeah.
And for anybody
awesome.
Who's listening and wants to go, how do they
yeah,
go?
Yeah. just if you go to my website, soulmatesecret.com, there's a little thing that says Omega Live Workshop. Just click on there.
Amazing.
But it's it gets amazing results because you spend an entire weekend focused on opening your heart to love, mm-hmm. focused on what your soul is most calling for when it comes to love, and leaving with not only the possibility and the inspiration that love is out there for you. I teach a really fast process on how to meet your soulmate today and start the relationship. I call it love before first sight.
How long is it to teach somebody? Can you teach us real quick?
Well, yeah.
It is. Okay, so let's detour from core wounds for a moment.
Okay.
Well, and teach us.
Okay, so we know what quantum science is,
yes.
right? In quantum science, there are a couple of things that are true. One is that there's no past and there's no future. There is just this now moment. Also in quantum science, we know that we all exist in a field. And in the field, we're already connected to everything and everybody. So knowing that is so, on the soul level, on the unseen plane, you are already connected to your soulmate. They're not missing. On that unseen plane, you're connected to them. And you can start the relationship today. You close your eyes, you drop into your heart, and you start talking to them. And I have this close eyes process. It's called a feelingization, and it's free on my website. Just go to the tab that's called free stuff. And you can listen to this 8-minute guided process where I put you into a state of heart coherence, and we send a golden cord of love out into the field to your soulmate.
You lasso him, basically.
You lasso their heart.
Whoa.
And you start the energetic connection. Now, I did this 21 years ago when I was manifesting Brian. And on the day that we met on the 3D world in for real, we instantly knew we were going to be together. And I believe it's because I was already talking to him every day.
Wow.
Every single day I would sit down to meditate in front of my love altar and I'd have a conversation with him. And some days it would be, hey, I just bought 2 tickets to see Sting at the Hollywood Bowl. If you get here in time, I'll take you with me. And other days I was yelling at him going, where are you? You are so late. Will you hurry up?
No way.
Yeah.
Wait, so this is fascinating because you just made me have like a moment of deja vu, because Kevin told me that before he met me, that his dad used to tell him, you need like a Murphy Brown. That's what you need. And he had pictured me. Kevin had pictured me in his head all those years. He had envisioned who I was, who his Murphy Brown was. So crazy. Meanwhile, on the other side, I always knew I was going to marry an Italian. Don't know how that.
Really?
Yep. Especially, and by the way, my parents were forcing me to marry someone Greek and I was very obedient, but somehow I knew it was going to be an Italian.
I wonder why.
And I knew I needed a caretaker. Didn't know I was going to have a couple brain tumors in my family and all these things, but I knew I needed a caretaker. And the day I met him, I knew he was the one. And I the second I found out he was a caretaker, I was like, oh, this is him. It's over. 20 years later.
Yeah. And what you just mentioned is so important, because where single women tend to get really screwed up looking for men is they make this list that isn't a match for what their soul is most calling for. And so I was always ending up with the same type. I thought I needed somebody who was even more ambitious than I was, which of course I didn't. And when I finally got to the point where I thought, okay, well, what is it that I most need? I was horrified to discover that what I most needed was somebody for whom I could be the center of their universe, somebody who was super generous with their love and affection and attention and appreciation, who could really be there for me, because I was always go, 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 doing, doing, doing. So you have to know, what is my soul need, as opposed to putting down a list of physical qualities and they need to have this kind of job and this kind of income, none of which is going to contribute to your long-term happiness.
Yeah. I never thought about any of those things.
Well, you're smart.
I never did. In fact, I actually always knew the opposite was better.
Wow.
Well, at least for me, because I knew what came with that. I knew all sorts of strings and other things, not to stereotype against everybody. But for me, I kind of knew what I needed, and I ended up getting that and more.
Well, I went off on a really bad tangent at one point, because I had this idea that if I found a short, ugly guy, then he wouldn't stray. He'd be so grateful to have me.
Oh my God.
And that also was not true.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Isn't that interesting? Ashley, do you know what your soul wants?
Well, I was going to say, okay, for the probably one other person that's in the universe that is like me, I've been with somebody my whole life since I was 14. So like 17 years. and I'm now 30, and now we're not, I don't think we're going to end up together. So, I've never dated. I don't even know how to have a date. I don't even know what that is. So like, where do you go when you've never done it and you're like at an age where you should already have a lot behind you?
Okay. Well, I don't want to get too self-promoting, but I have a course for that. And you can listen to a free webinar. Oh, it's cool. at soulmatepassion44.com.
Okay, I'll write that.
Soulmatepassion44.com. There's a free 75-minute webinar, okay. And it'll give you a lot of information about that just in the free webinar, and it'll tell you how to sign up online if you want to take the whole thing. But it's all about dating and mating, because there is stuff to know, especially today. There's ways to stay really safe. There's ways to present yourself online that are super effective, because the latest statistics about online dating are so positive. Right now, 1 in 3 marriages is starting online.
Wow.
And the divorce rate for people who meet and marry online is under 8%. And the national average is 50%.
But how many years is that? Are they basing that on? Because online dating hasn't...
It's been around for 20 years
probably.
Really?
Now. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But it's evolved a lot.
What do you think is making that big difference?
I think it's a couple of things. A lot of the people online, especially the ones who end up getting married, are doing it with a purpose. So they know they want to get married. They already have their parameters out there. You know, so people have been sorted by age and by religion and by interest.
You're cutting through the bullshit, basically.
Right. And they want to sort through faster. So when they have the coffee dates, they're communicating more clearly. So I think that's part of it, as opposed to just hoping to get lucky.
Wow.
You know, like if you were a single mom of 3 kids,
right,
you wouldn't sit home on the couch watching reality TV thinking, well, if it's meant to be for me to have a job, Amazon will deliver it, right?
Right.
But women do that with their love lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's meant to be, well, that's not the way the law of attraction works. If it's meant to be, you know, what you need to do is find out what your desire is, what your soul is calling for, then surrender and be detached from the outcome while you simultaneously put your energy and effort into action steps. And that's sort of the paradox. You know, people can't get that you can be both surrendered and detached and in action at the same time.
Yeah, that's really tough to figure out,
it is,
honestly.
Well, it's kind of a brain thing, you know. It's hard to get to, but it actually works, because while I'm out there dating, I can go to each date, oh, could I make a new friend? Could I have fun? As opposed to, are you the one?
Yeah, pressure.
Right, and that kind of desperation bleeds out and is not attractive.
Yeah.
But I have this friend who's a dating coach named Evan Mark Katz, and he always says that on these early dates, you want to talk to the person as if they're the person seated next to you on an airplane.
Mm.
That level of casual, curious interest.
Interesting.
As opposed to, well, let me tell you about my last husband or my last wife.
Yeah.
Right.
The other thing I really recommend that women do is have sex before the first date.
What?
Wait, why?
Yes, sex
before. Like some random?
Yeah, like what?
Okay, so
I've only had sex with one person. It's just very scary.
Can I have a mercy lay? I'm going on a date tonight, and Ariel Ford told me I need to get laid before I go.
Right.
Oh, my God.
So it's an acronym. The S stands for sex, which also stands for self-pleasure. So if you haven't had sex in a long time, you don't want to show up really horny,
Oh
my God, I'm going to, you know, jump this guy because he's so cute. The E
Oh my God, that's so funny.
The E is for eating. You need to eat before you go on the date, because if you're going to have drinks or on an empty stomach and you're horny, you're going to get into trouble.
Yeah.
And the X is for no talking about your ex on the date.
I love that.
Totally.
I'm always surprised at people who bring all that negativity and baggage into a first date. I'm like, I would not be interested in you.
Yeah.
No,
100%.
Nobody would. And really, you want to just be playful and have fun and explore and look for common ground.
Yeah.
Not opposed to, are you the one? And here's the other thing that happens. There's a lot of women, especially those that are considering themselves spiritual, who think they're just going to know. The guy's going to knock on the door. They're going to open the door. And 20 seconds later, yes or no. And what the statistics are showing is that for most women, they don't even begin to feel chemistry or attraction till the 5th date.
Wow.
Because women fall in love between their ears.
Yeah.
Men are visual. Men often know faster. Men will know in the 1st or 2nd date if this is somebody worth pursuing. But women think they know. but they won't know. I can tell you a story about this if we have time.
Yeah.
Okay. So I had this one woman that I was coaching. I think her name was Jamie. And she'd gone out with this guy 3 times. And he kind of met her must-haves and her never-again list sort of thing. But she just wasn't feeling it. Mm-hmm. And she had said to me, I think this is our last date. I really think I'm wasting time, even though he's a great guy. And as they were driving home from the 3rd date, and she was thinking of ways to nicely tell him this is it, the car in front of them hit a dog, and then the car drove off. And her date pulled over, told her to get on her phone and find the closest emergency vet. He went out, picked up the dog. You're going to cry, Maria. Put the dog in the back seat, took the dog to the emergency vet. The dog was chipped. It was a broken leg. He told the vet, I'll pay for it. Take care of the dog. He called the owner. He said, I don't want you to panic, but, you know, Cooper just got ran over, and I'm here at the emergency vet, and they're fixing him up. I'm going to pay for it, I'm bringing him home to you.
Oh, my God.
And that's when she fell in love with him.
I just got goosebumps.
Because she saw who he was at his core level, at his soul level, and they got married, and they now have their first baby.
See, that's the thing, is, like, you have to give things time. Everyone just assumes, like, okay, yes, I knew instantly with Kevin, but it's not always like that. You have to give people a chance to get to know their character, and you fall more in love with their character.
And you want your friends and family to meet them, and you want to meet their friends and family because, you know, right now, statistically, 1 in every 24 men in this country is a sociopath.
Oh,
and
God.
Sociopaths are very charismatic and very charming.
I know. I watched Versace. Did you see the show?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes, and they show up really well, and they tend to target successful women, you know. So the good news is, if you've been with a sociopath, don't blame yourself. You were targeted directly. But the bad news is they're not easy to spot. So you really have to give yourself time. There's no rush, no matter what age you are.
Yeah.
This is the single most important choice and decision you're ever going to make.
Yep.
So do it mindfully and give yourself at least 1 year before you decide if you're going to spend the rest of your life with them.
Yeah. I always say it took me years and years and years to believe that Kevin was as good as he was. Like, I was like, is he for real? Like, sometimes, because he was so good, I'm like,
don't say that too much, because when I said it about my boyfriend, I swear, it was like right after that, I was like, how come I'm the only lucky person? I'm so lucky. How is any- I remember driving being like, I can't believe, how am I? I'm like, well, maybe because my past was kind of shitty, so like I have this amazing person, whatever. Not that he's not amazing in his own way, but whatever. I was like, this is so crazy. How, pinch me. This is so cool. Then all of a sudden, like, I feel like that
but
was like the
Ashley,
last.
I've got really good news for you.
Don't say
okay,
that.
Okay. So
I've said it forever.
Whoever this guy is, clearly he's a soulmate for you. And there may be an expiration date on the relationship.
Yes.
And the good news is there are potentially hundreds of thousands of other soulmates out there for you. It's that whole thing, we each only get one big love in a lifetime. Mm-hmm. It's totally not true.
Oh, that's
totally
good to know.
Not true. So if you're sticking around thinking this was it, not true.
Oh, okay. Well, good to know.
Do
I thought there was only one.
Panic. We veered off into all of this amazing relationship stuff. I want to get back to the core wounds. And also, I want to talk about poverty consciousness. And what that is, which I know what it is because I've lived it. And, you know, it's funny. Since my surgery, I've released all of that and I've surrendered and I feel so much better and abundance keeps flowing.
Yes. Yes. And there's a lot of healing that can come from that. I didn't know that I had poverty consciousness until I got married. And I ended up marrying somebody who grew up in a very affluent home, whose mother trained him to buy only the best of everything and designer goods. I grew up in a home where every single day there were World War III over money. There was never enough. Mm-hmm. Most of my life, all the clothes I had were hand-me-downs from other people. I never bought anything that was new or it was, you know, heavily discounted. And then suddenly I'm with this guy who's buying, you know, $75 bottles of wine. And, you know, I remember once we were on one of my book tours in Cleveland and it started to snow. And we had to go. He needed a coat to wear. And he picked out this coat, and I looked at the price tag, and it was $600. And I was like, $600? I've never paid more than $75. And he looked at me like I was crazy. He goes, because my last coat that I bought was a $2,000 Armani, but I've had it for 15 years. And I just thought, oh my God, why am I so triggered by this? Mm-hmm. So as I started to think about it, I realized that I had all this fear of being a bag lady, of being homeless, of not having enough money. And I had never shared any of this with him. So finally, I sat him down one night and I said, you know, we had totally different childhoods. And I have all this fear and concern, which is why I've worked so hard and I've saved pretty much everything I've ever made. And I understand I don't want to police you around money and I don't want you to police me, but we got to figure this out. And we did. It was really great. We came up with a solution. There's my money, his money, and our money.
Ooh.
And then on the our money part, nobody spends more than $500 without having a conversation about it.
So what, do you guys put money in a kitty, basically?
No, I mean, we just have separate accounts.
Okay, but you know? How do you get to the our money? How does the our money end up in our money?
Yeah, it's a good question.
Thanks,
Ash.
It goes into a joint account.
But, like, are you putting in equal amounts?
Not always. No, okay. But it's not even that. And that was a long time ago, so now it's all kind of one thing.
Yeah.
But at that time when we were first together, that was sort of my solution for it. But now what I have learned to appreciate quality and really nice things and understanding that sometimes paying retail's okay. Mm-hmm. And Brian's learned to shop sales.
Wow. So see, you guys helped each other because I had a vision, like a piece of art, a photo of the two of you. You're like, what? Horrified. And he's like, he's horrified. And you're both on the opposite ends of the spectrum. Who's to say who's right?
Well, it wasn't about right or wrong. It was about coming up with the creative solution.
Yeah.
So what was going to have me be able to rest at night? Because this was not his problem. This was my problem. Because it wasn't like there wasn't enough money to cover all the things. It was the way the money was being spent that was freaking me out.
Yeah.
And so, and I went to therapy. I did therapy on it. I have tapping programs that I do.
Really?
EFT tapping.
I need to do it.
I can show you what it is, but basically now it hardly ever comes up at all anymore. Yeah. And on the rare occasions when it does, you're going to love what I do. I take out my reports from AJ and look at my retirement account.
AJ Gupta, our financial guru.
Oh, AJ, right.
That's so funny.
And so when I'm looking at that, I realize there's no way I'm ever going to be homeless because that's the underlying fear.
Yeah. It's funny. What I did, because Kevin's not a spender on himself, he's very frugal, but he's a spender in business. And so he will never skimp on business. And it's amazing because it's gotten us this far. If it was up to me, I would still have every penny I ever made in my life. Okay. I'm just like you. I would squirrel it all away. And I do. I squirrel. And I actually started squirreling.
I have money
hardcore.
Hidden all over the house.
I squirreled so big time one year. I was like lying to him and telling him we weren't making anything and blah, blah, blah. And then at the end of the year, I was like, look what I saved. And he was like, whoa.
Wow.
But what I did is I just started giving in. I was like, you know what? You clearly have issues and you're bringing them forth. And a lot of them are based on an old reality that is no longer. And so I was like, just give it to God. And I was like, if he's going to spend on building me a studio, then just let him build the studio. And if he's going to spend on, you know, building us a network, let him spend whatever it is, because otherwise I would have gone crazy and I would have made him crazy.
It's a deep one for a lot of people. In fact, I'll tell you a funny story about Jack Canfield, who co-wrote the Chicken Soup for the Soul books. So I was doing all the book publicity in the early days, 20 years ago when those books came out.
I remember. I loved them.
Right? So at one point, 5 of the books were on the New York Times bestseller list.
At the same time?
At the same time.
Wow.
And I was on the phone with him one day, and I said to him, I said, Jack, do you feel rich? And he thought about it because he'd been a school teacher before all this happened. And he said to me, no, I don't. And I said, well, what will it take for you to feel rich? And he said, when I have $10 million and my house is paid for. Great, I get that. So go fast forward 20 years. Last year, we're at his house for his 70th birthday party.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, Jack, I'm going to ask you something I asked you 20 years ago. Do you feel rich? And he said to me, he goes, well, I know that I'm rich. He said, but truthfully, not quite enough yet. And I said, well, what's it going to take? Because I didn't remind him of what he had said before. He said, when I have $20 million and my house is paid for. So here he is.
Moving,
you know,
he's got, moving the finish line.
Right. Yeah.
Right? Because that's what the people like us that have poverty consciousness, there's this always niggling thing like there's not quite enough.
Yeah.
Like when there's enough, then I won't feel this lack, which is never true.
Yeah. Well, it's just fear of like what could happen if, you know, well, also the more you make, the higher your living standards go.
Right.
And so then you end up being relative to just about anybody, right? I'm relative to you and you're relative to Ashley. We're all relative because we're all living to our means.
Right.
My means may be higher than yours, but and so the fear ends up being the same in a sense.
Right. And I observed that a lot with, you know, some of the best-selling authors I worked with. And Deepak Chopra never had this issue because I talked about it to him one time. And I said, well, how is it, you know, that all these other people like Wayne Dyer, like Wayne, talk about frugal, you know, his wallet would squeak when he opened it, you know, because he was in foster care as a child. So money was really important to him. And I said, Deepak, why don't you have poverty consciousness? And he just laughed and laughed. And he said, for starters, I grew up in a wealthy home. It never occurred to me that I wouldn't make a lot of money. And the truth is, I'm not attached to the money. I don't do what I do for the money ever. I do it because I love it. And I'm on a mission.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Well, there you go. Believe that will never go away.
Yeah.
Okay, so then how do we move forward from these core wounds, from poverty consciousness and such? What are some of the techniques and tools that people could employ?
Yeah, there's a lot of them. I call it self-soothing. So when our stuff comes up, and it will come up, rather than go into a panic and start to freak out and get all fearful, what can you do to bring yourself into a sane, neutral place? So one of my favorite techniques is to use EFT tapping, you know, and you can find out how to do it. It's free online. Just Google, you know, EFT tapping, and there's lots of things. But basically, it's a series of self-talks while you're tapping on meridian points on your head and parts of your body. So tapping works really well for me. I also like to do a technique I call a feelingization. And what a feelingization is, it's a process that takes you from the thoughts in your head, drops you down into your heart. You focus on reliving in the moment feelings of love, appreciation, and gratitude. It's called a heart lock-in. It was created by the geniuses at the Institute of Heart Math. And you go into this state known as heart coherence. And when you're in heart coherence, when you're literally feeling in every cell of your body love or gratitude, your energetic fields move out an additional 12 feet. You're actually in this cocoon of love and gratitude. And your heart rhythm changes, and it can be measured on an EKG. You can literally see your heart rate go from what's normally very spiky into this sine wave that's very smooth and curvy, and you can feel the difference. So you're telling your heart intelligence is reprogramming your brain intelligence, and when you're focused on love, all you get to feel is more love as opposed to the fear, the anger, the envy, the greed, the disappointment, whatever the negative emotions are that triggered you in the first place.
Wow. So it's a shift.
It's a total shift.
That you have to make inside.
It's a mind, body, spirit shift.
Okay.
You know, and they actually, HeartMath has apps that you can put on your phone.
What's it called? HeartMath?
Heart, like H-E-A-R-T, math, M-A-T-H. It's one word.
Okay.
And their website is heartmath.org. And I ran into a guy at a wedding we performed a few weeks ago who played for, I don't remember the names of football teams, but he had a Super Bowl ring on. And so,
well, if he had five, I would say he was a Patriot,
right?
A New England Patriot, but he probably just had one.
He has three. He has three, but he's only wearing one.
Okay.
And somehow we started talking about heart math, and he just lit up and he pulled out his phone. He said, "That's my blankie. I use heart math every day." And he pulled out the little ear, you clip ear sensor on and plug it into your phone.
What?
And then you can do a heart lock-in by using your phone.
I've never heard of this before. How do I not know about this?
Well, you know now. It's the most amazing way to shift your energy in just a few minutes. And it's really fun. It's really easy. And I give away tons of these feelingizations for free at the website, soulmatesecret.com, mm-hmm. hit free stuff. And there's dozens of free feelingizations that include the heart lock-in.
Are those also affirmations, or is that different?
They are not affirmations. You know, affirmations are statements. And they're useful if you can have your emotional body matching the words coming out of your mouth.
What does that mean exactly?
So if you're saying, okay, I really want the 2018 Porsche Carrera convertible, blah, 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 and I see myself driving down the 101 and I can smell the leather and I can feel the steering wheel, and internally, the conversation is, I can't afford it. I don't deserve it. I'm never going to have it. You're never going to have it.
So it's like what Esther Hicks says, is like the desire and the belief has to match.
Have to be in alignment, which is why I do these feelingizations with a heart lock-in, because we get out of the head, we go into the heart, we re-experience a time when we felt love or gratitude, and we imagine that it's happening again right now, or like right now in this moment. I'm allowing myself to re-experience love. And when I'm in this state of heart coherence, then I drop in the desire. Wouldn't it be lovely to know that without knowing how it's going to happen, this Porsche Carrera becomes mine? You know, or whatever the desire is, or that I'm connecting on the 3D physical plane with my soulmate today. And then you do the golden cord exercise and you start to know, oh, well, on this unseen level, we're already connected. You know, and then it's not your job to know how, when, or where they're going to knock on your door, but it continues to be your job to know, trust, and believe that the one you've asked for is not only yours already, but they're looking for you too.
Whoa.
It's crazy.
I love that.
Yeah.
Ariel's going to take us through a feelingization for abundance.
Yes, because we can all use more abundance. Exactly.
So take
Great.
Us through.
Okay, so if it's safe for you to close your eyes, then close your eyes, put your feet flat on the floor, and just relax into the seat that you're in. Notice if your shoulders are up around your ears, and if they are, just allow your shoulders to drop. And I want you to know there's no wrong way to do this. You cannot screw this up. So just listen and follow along as best you can. So we're going to begin by taking a long, slow, deep breath in through our nose and out through our mouth. Take another long, slow, deep breath in through your nose and out through your mouth. And as you inhale this time, allow your attention just to drop down to the area around your heart. And with your attention on the area around your heart, just imagine you're just slowly breathing in and out through your heart space. And with your attention on the area around your heart, I want you to remember a time when you felt gratitude. It could be gratitude for anything or anyone. Just pick an experience of gratitude, whether it happened today or long ago. Choose an experience of gratitude. And keeping your focus on your heart, imagine this moment of gratitude is happening again right now. In this now moment, whatever it is you're grateful for, you are now re-experiencing it. It is now an experience you're having again in this moment. Just breathe with your heart and allow yourself to feel gratitude. Now let this go. And I want you to call up a time or an experience when you felt love. Doesn't need to be romantic love. Any moment of love. It could be looking into the eyes of a beloved pet or a friend or a baby or a moment of love with a family member or a spouse. But pull up one of your favorite experiences when you felt love. And keeping your attention on your heart, allow every cell in your body to re-experience this now moment of love. And as you're re-experiencing this moment of love, see the love as a pink cloud emanating out of your body and encircling you in a cocoon of pink love. You are in this moment experiencing love. And as you can continue to sit in this moment of love, think about an area of your life in which you are experiencing abundance. It could be that you have an abundance of family love, an abundance of pets, you know, an abundance of gratitude for your career. But find an area of your life where you are very clear you have abundance already. Just allow yourself to feel the abundance that you have. And as you're doing that, let a desire for another kind of abundance surface. Maybe it's you want an abundance of more income or abundance of new love, whatever that is. Allow that desire just to surface and be wrapped in the existing abundance and be wrapped in all the love that you already have. And be wrapped in all the gratitude that you have. And just for this moment, using your imagination, know that on the unseen plane, what you've asked for is already yours. What you've asked for is already yours. You don't need to know how or when or where. Just know that right now, in this moment, on the unseen plane, what you've asked for is already yours. Now take a long, slow, deep breath in through your nose and out through your mouth. Feel your feet on the floor. Shake out your hands. And when you're ready, just simply open your eyes.
Thanks again for joining us. Hopefully you will rate, comment, subscribe. We'd love for you to tell a friend, join the community. We're all trying to get better together here. In the meantime, follow us at Maria Menounos, at SiriusXM Stars, at Ashley Daniels. Oh, at Miss Ashley Daniels. Whoa, I almost screwed that up.
Oh, it would be so bad if you did.
Oh my Lord, I was doing it off the top of my head. At Christy Reports. And remember, be nice people, make good choices, and be present.